thank you for joining me today on the CMDA Matters podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp, the CEO of CMDA, and today my guest will be explaining how COVID-19 is impacting the mental health of both patients and you as healthcare professionals. You know, I was reading this week the most recent edition of JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, and I read an article entitled COVID-19 Crushing Effects on Medical Practices, Some of Which Might Not Survive. The article pointed out that in a survey of 724 medical practices, that COVID-19 was having a rather severe negative financial effect on 97% of them. And then in another survey, they pointed out that the Texas Medical Association found 68% of practicing physicians in that state had cut their work hours because of COVID-19, and 62% had had their salaries reduced. Well, last week I had a phone conversation with a former missionary friend who's a family physician, and he's been working full-time in an urgent care walk-in in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He's cutting back to half-time to launch a new ministry leadership position with us at CMDA. So I asked him, how tough is it going to be for you to cut back your patient care? And he told me that cutting back in the midst of this summer surge of COVID-19 in Milwaukee is going to be a wonderful, in his words, relief and respite. Well, it's in that backdrop that I wanted to talk with Christian psychiatrist Dr. Tom Okamoto. He's a board-certified adult psychiatrist with a specialty in adolescent psychiatry, and he's the co-chair of our very own CMDA psychiatry section. Previously, he held a post as assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at the UCLA School of Medicine, as well as medical director of the Minerth Meyer Clinic West, adult and adolescent inpatient programs. He's currently an assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at the University of California Irvine School of Medicine in Santa Ana, California. He's married with three adult children. So I invite you now to listen in on my conversation with Dr. Okamoto, together with my co-host, Dr. Jeff Barrows, who's our CMDA Senior Vice President for Bioethics and Public Policy. Well, I want to welcome to the microphone today Dr. Tom Okamoto to our program, CMDA Matters. Tom is a psychiatrist on the west or left coast, as some say, and is also the chair of our psychiatry section at CMDA. And I've invited also Dr. Jeff Barrows, our senior vice president of bioethics and public policy. We're going to have three physicians talking about mental health issues in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. So welcome, Tom. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks very much, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a blessing. I'm co-chair with Brian Briscoe, who's out in the Kentucky area as well. So we try to cover both sides of the right and left areas if we can. It's an interesting field to be in these days.
Well, can you tell us a couple of things so our listeners can get to know you just a little bit better? Tell us about your faith walk, and then tell us about your history with the Christian Medical and Dental Associations.
I was raised in Southern California, had a grandmother who took care of me while my parents were at work. She was full-on first-generation Japanese, but my grandparents had been converted by the church when they got here, by the Methodists, and were planning to become missionaries. So it was very interesting background. The internment in World War II came, and that kind of got put on hold. But in the meantime, I came along afterwards, and I was raised by her and grew up hearing Rock of Ages and a lot of old hymns, and in high school was part of the Jesus movement and gave my life over to Christ at that time. And kind of little by little, kind of grew and grew, and as time went on, ended up in psychiatry, and definitely God's direction in hand, bringing me to a very unusual place in medicine, but got involved with groups here and there that were very influential, Minerth Meyer and Cloud and Townsend approached me to do their medical directing, and I became a psychiatrist for their units. And eventually, as time went on, grew more and more into the role of private practitioner and seeing a lot of people in the church, including people in the local Christian universities and theology schools, and just grew more and more, and eventually became part of CMDA, and have felt that it was very much part of God's direction as time has gone on through my career.
So you joined Tom when you were a graduate or during medical school?
I connected late into my career as an assistant clinical professor. I had been doing some things with the local psychiatric society in governmental affairs and learning about community relationships, and felt like, well, there's something called the CMDA, and there's a psychiatry section, and I should be a part of that. So the past few years have jumped in and enjoyed the fellowship, and kind of a unique ministry within CMDA is now psychiatry has become a big part of medicine. So kind of late in my career, but a good time.
Within medicine, certainly psychiatrists who are Christians, I must say that as I was going through my own general surgery practice in a community hospital and then serving overseas and having short-term doctors come and serve with us, I really didn't encounter that many Christians in psychiatry. Are there many out there, Tom?
There are actually a lot of closet Christians who are psychiatrists. The field started out very early with one of the early psychoanalysts, Oscar Pfister, who was a very good friend of Freud's, and he was trying to kind of win him over, and there were some victories in terms of having Freud confronted and understand the faith. But since that time, and even before then, when psychiatry was first birthed in the 1800s, there were a lot of Christians physicians who were initially neurologists who saw the whole side of mental illness and were really touched that there's this whole part of humanity that had mental illnesses that were not characterized and not treated. And since then, a number of famous psychiatrists who are also Christian, who we never knew they were Christian until you started to look into it. Winnicott, who has a lot to do with, he was a pediatrician, became an early psychoanalyst. Benjamin Rush, who's the father of American psychiatrists, major figures in psychiatry who are Christian. Their faith has been sort of written out of the history books, and you have to look for it. But even in my own area in Southern California, when you start looking at license plates and you start talking about faith and spirituality now, the past few years, there's an evidence base that spirituality and religion is very helpful in mental health. The field actually has included caucus on religion and psychiatry and spirituality. There's a lot of research base for including spirituality in treatment planning, and part of the interviews now are to include spiritual histories. So psychiatry has warmed up to spirituality and is no longer antagonistic. And a lot of Christian psychiatrists are there. They just have been very hidden, and now they're kind of coming out, so to speak, and being a little more comfortable with their role as psychiatrists who also go to church, who also have a spiritual life, who also are growing in the faith with their careers.
Well, Tom, that's very good to know, especially with this recent COVID-19 pandemic. So I wanted to ask you, what kinds of mental health issues have people been experiencing, and what have you seen in your practice in dealing with COVID-19?
At this stage, I am more of an outpatient psychiatrist, so I am not in the hospitals, but I do have colleagues who are deeply embedded in the hospital practice or CNL psychiatrists, so they are seeing a lot of mental ravaging of the patients in terms of neuropsychiatric syndromes, deliriums, dementia, dysexecutive syndromes, along with the worsenings of mood disorders, psychotic disorders. It's worse than has been in the public. It's very difficult. And a lot of times the mental part of all of this, the neuropsychiatric, is relegated to the background a little bit because we're just trying to help these patients survive. So it's very significant in terms of depression, anxiety, PTSD. What's interesting is that now it's such an international illness, and science has tried to coordinate all of our research efforts. We're getting research papers coming from all over the globe in terms of mental health issues and effects of COVID on the population, on frontline providers, because we've been preparing for something like this in terms of mental health effects of pandemics and traumatic events like this in the culture for quite a while. So even just things like unemployment issues in the society have affected suicide rates and are a significant concern. So this is not just projected concerns. These are databases that we pull from that these events in culture and society and global health affect mental health very severely.
So Tom, I've been hearing about the incidence of headaches among these COVID-19 patients, but this is the first time hearing about neuropsychiatric manifestations of the illness. Are those primary to COVID-19 or are those secondary just to being to ill patients?
Both. Some of the early papers from Italy when it was at the heat of infection were coming out with numbers as high as 30 to 40% with neuropsychiatric syndromes, and people in the ICUs, it's very common to have deliriums and confusional states, people who have just lost orientations. And then what is now a concern is post-intensive care syndromes, that after you've been ventilated for even a few days, people are somewhat traumatized and still recovering in terms of acute confusional states or deliriums. It takes a while, and sometimes they're discharged with these syndromes where they have deficits that sometimes recover and sometimes they're not recovering. So that's a very huge concern now that people are out of the hospital more and more. There is kind of the reevaluation of, okay, how bad is the disability from the infections?
Well, I'm sure our listeners would like to hear from you. What sort of mental health issues have first-line responders been experiencing on the front lines of care? I would guess that not too many of our listeners have not heard about Dr. Lorna Breen and taking of her life. And subsequent to that, you and I have been participating in a session called Oasis in New York City, which is a gathering of Christian physicians and other healthcare professionals to encourage one another to worship God together. And, you know, we've heard some stories from that gathering, but what has been your experience in hearing from first-line responders? What's been going on?
It's a matter of how familiar you are and how close you are to the folks that are providing the frontline care. There's kind of a sense of a little bit of shame and stigma attached to opening this whole field up. It's like anybody who goes through stress reactions or acute trauma, you sort of compartmentalize it. You don't want to talk about it. But more and more in places where there is a lessening of the acuity of the numbers, people are kind of reevaluating what they've been through. A lot of difficulty with, you know, the typical things you hear, which is depression, anxiety, stress reactions. But, you know, our population of providing healthcare has also been very vulnerable to concepts like burnout and the change in medicine these days leading to an increase in suicide rates. So it's actually a very vulnerable population when things happen and there aren't enough resources. There's a lot of external fears and fears of what do we do? How do we keep our families safe? How do we deal with the financial and just the issues at home in terms of kids are at home, not going to school, just pragmatic day-to-day kinds of issues, and then issues of what's been starting to write about in terms of healthcare provision is moral injuries. When the infections were at its peak, there was a lot of, let's say, in quotes, clinical choices of who gets the ventilator, when does the ventilator go, who gets the healthcare, who decides who doesn't get the healthcare. And those are choices that you would think would be happening on the missions field or in a third world country. But we're kind of surprised and horrified that maybe the medical system in the United States still was vulnerable to those kinds of problems and lack of resources. And the physicians we've not been kind of trained how to deal with that kind of stress. It's very kind of a surprising thing. There are attempts and good things that have been done, and more research is going to be coming out in the next few months about this, about how to better prepare and how to better manage teams of providers and how to help people get through this more proactively, because it was just so quick and harsh that people were just trying to survive it. Not enough PPEs and so forth. It was just such a shock how bad it was.
Well, that brings up a question I wanted to ask you, Tom, and we're seeing, at least in some parts of the country, a diminution in the rate of infection, and hopefully that will not only continue but increase through the summer. But we may have, and people are expecting, an increase in the pandemic in the fall. So what advice would you give to first responders and healthcare professionals to prepare themselves for that possible coming increase in the next few months?
Ooh, that's a scary thought. And we're just kind of taking a breath in certain areas. I think down where I'm at in Southern California, we're kind of tentatively very worried that numbers are going up, and we are well supplied and we have more data about how to care for people who are infected, but we're very tense about what we're going to see in the next few months. It's not going away anytime really soon. But there is an interesting article that I came across from the UK, and someplace where you're kind of surprised it came from. It was a European Heart Journal from Acute Cardiovascular Care. This was early in April, and it was by Walton Murray and Christian, mental health care for medical staff and affiliated healthcare workers during the COVID pandemic. Really good information and really good suggestions about how to manage the stress, kind of a review article of mental health effects and how to manage them practically. So talking about things like how you take care of your team if you're in a leadership position, how are you to take care of your colleagues who you see, you know, to kind of step up and watch and make sure the mental health issues of everybody around you are being addressed and attended to, how you can be a better colleague or a better leader, and how you can, as an administrator, help with being proactive with providing supports for the families, for the care providers, like rooms for rest, for food, for structure, and to help reduce the anxiety. So there are a number of international studies that have been very helpful. Early studies from China actually were helpful in describing what types of interventions they would provide teams of mental health providers that were embedded into the hospitals, and the intensive care units would just roam and be present. And they've adopted this in some of the hospital systems in New York as well, where take care of their chaplains, taking care of family issues, or just available for decompressing and being aware of any moment that a healthcare provider may need to vent of a trauma situation, and help with things like taking kids somewhere or arranging food or supplies or just practical kinds of things, and hospitals providing rest areas where people can take naps or get food or just practical things that when it's really hot and heavy, it's sort of very helpful just to have basic things like that going on.
Tom, I wanted to ask, you know, as I've read multiple different articles about the stresses that healthcare professionals have faced in this pandemic, and that the word uncertainty is really the word that sort of describes what, whether it's you're a dentist sitting on the sideline because your practice is closed, or you're a specialist who's not able to do most of your surgery because it's elective, or you're in the ICU hospitalist taking care of COVID-19 patients, is just uncertainty. And then all of the mental stress involved with that, emotional stress, that out of this, maybe a silver lining would be a huge push, a huge jump start to physician wellness programs across this country like never before because of COVID-19. Would you anticipate that happening, that the stigma maybe is going to be washed away a little bit more than before, and that healthcare professionals will be more willing to look for help because this is something we've never faced before?
I think it's the efforts have been positive to try to get there, but we're built with certain DNA training with the way we do, and needing the aggressiveness and denial to be in the front lines and to take care of patients and to jump in when we may have personal fear or anxiety about certain things. Our goal is to treat patients, and we're kind of grown to do that. So it's always going to be difficult to acknowledge weakness and needs and self-care. Those are things that are very kind of on the bottom of the list because we do what we do. But what they found is that if you provide, let's say, as an administrator, a hospital director, if you proactively have these things in place already, the discomfort becomes much less and the utilization can be increased. It's all anywhere in the world, doctors are resistant to acknowledging their own weaknesses and the needs for their own support and care. When people are there in the moment, ready to catch and listen, these can be chaplains, they can be mental health people, they can be leaders on the team, to be trained to be watching for these moments where somebody needs to decompress and somebody needs to have some place to process through their stress at home or some tragedy that they've been part of, or multiple patients dying. You need to be able to pray or process through that, and to have somebody there, that's when when the need is there and somebody is available, that's when good things can happen. And that's what leaders can provide in those moments. And so, it's not a comfortable thing. It's a little more acceptable, but there will still be part of us that's built in to try to be strong and to put our own needs aside. And there are ways that we can catch those moments where there's a need and we can actually do good work at that point.
Tom, I wanted to ask, it's been reported by some who've studied physicians and their mental health issues that doctors are much more willing to open up to a colleague in their network than they are with a mental health professional. Like that's the ultimate admission that I'm broken, I failed. So many of our listeners, the majority are not mental health professionals. So what recommendations would you make to those of us who've not studied psychiatry and who don't do this for a living? What kind of recommendations would you make to us when we hear about stress, difficulties, and some level of brokenness coming from our colleagues?
The stigma and shame that we carry as physicians, kind of expected to be superheroes these days, and this is part of this whole thing about heroes and cowards these days, there's so much stigma to not fulfill that role of the super person without weakness. As Christians, we know that that's quite not a healthy thing, and it's spiritually not the right direction for us, but we all are encouraged to be there as MDs these days, and first liners are pressured. So stigma is huge. So we have to consider, especially the ones who are believers, that we take the mantle for supporting and caring for and loving our colleagues. As leaders, we can, be better leaders in terms of looking out for mental health issues and wellness issues. Mm-hmm. Look for how our colleagues and our team members are doing in terms of sleep and anxiety management and stress tolerance and coping, how family time is available or not available, how are people doing self-care. We have to each look at our colleagues and see what they need and how are they doing, and ask and talk and communicate, be supportive, spend time, and make sure, you know, that other people are getting enough sleep and are taking care of themselves, and families are being cared for. Just, you know, what can you do to support them on your shifts off and so forth? So we have to take that time, since the hurdle of going to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist outside of your sphere is really looked upon as a last resort. So, and in terms of the studies, for the most part, people will adapt and adjust if they have some humanity and support around them. People experience a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress, but for most people, they recover. Some people need some treatment. Some people need more attentiveness and care and management or monitoring by the leadership. But most of the folks on front lines actually are pretty resilient.
And are there markers that you can give us that would say, hey, Mike, you run into a colleague who says this or is doing this, or you notice this, this is someone you need to be strongly urging to get help from a mental health professional?
Talking about the kinds of things that you see in the list, but change in personality, irritability, lack of patience, impulsiveness, lack of energy, people who appear drained and are not taking care of themselves, who are not kind of keeping a balance. One of the conferences I attended talked about portion control. If people are not doing portion control of food, sleep, relationships, the internet, and so forth, those are kind of signs that maybe people are out of balance or not able to manage the stress. So, but things like panic attacks, sleep, cognitive function, and emotional reserves are things that you watch for. And if somebody's having a lot of trouble and being a little more impulsive and having decisions that are not their typical decision process, sometimes it's helpful to suggest and kind of give a list of, okay, there are a lot of apps, there are a lot of ways that the hospitals sometimes have transitioned to certain treatment areas. So it's a very tricky thing, but if we all do it, then it's not so much unusual.
Well, we've basically run out of time, Dr. Okamoto. I want to thank you and Dr. Brian Briscoe and Marshall Williams, who's your administrative assistant in the psychiatry section. I think you guys are an incredible group of leaders who are very interested. I was one of many of my disappointments in the cancellation of the national convention was the afternoon session that you had planned to talk to us, give us an update on management of depression. But I want to encourage you. I know one of your motivations is that you get out among our many chapters in the various schools and encourage students to consider psychiatry as a profession. It does seem like a profession that is somewhat broken and has become secularized. And I think Dr. Barrows here will agree with me that we're struggling against a lot of brokenness.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tom, for taking the time to be with us today.
It's been a pleasure to be here, and keep praying for the CMDA and great ministries.
Dr. Okamoto mentioned that psychiatry is becoming an increasingly secular specialization, and that may be a turnoff to believers who are seeking professional counseling. Yet Christians struggling with depression are often facing stigma within the church and feelings of their own personal spiritual failure. We have a brand new book at CMDA called Downcast. It was published earlier this year, and it promotes the biblical and medical hope for depression. It was written by Dr. Jennifer Harris, who was my guest on CMDA Matters a couple of months ago, also with Dr. Harold Koenig and Dr. John Petit. It's a very thoughtful and practical guide, and it weaves together scripture, theology, cutting-edge scientific research, and the stories of many well-known and highly respected Christians who have suffered themselves with depression. The author's desire is to help those with depression, whether they're followers of Christ or those yet to experience God's grace and forgiveness, for them to find healing. This book can be purchased on our website at cmda.org/store, or just call us at 888-230-2637 and we'll get it to you right away. If you are a colleague in your clinic or practice or hospital is struggling to deal with the additional stress which COVID-19 has added to their lives, you can check out CMDA's Center for Wellbeing at cmda.org/wellbeing. This is a growing ministry of CMDA, created to empower and assist healthcare professionals to align with God, optimize well-being, and maximize your influence in healthcare. Back in July, I interviewed Dr. David Goodman on CMDA Matters regarding a Bible study that he developed on the book of James, available on the CMDA Student Life app. He told us about a new Bible study he was writing entitled, Teach Us to Pray, and it's based on the Lord's Prayer. It is now available and can be found on the CMDA Student Life app, which is a free download on iTunes or Google Play or your usual source of apps for your phone or device. As I wrap up this podcast, I want to remind you a new CMDA Matters podcast is released every Thursday and encourage you to subscribe in iTunes or Google Play or what other podcast subscription platform you use. You can choose to listen to CMDA Matters on your smartphone, your computer, your tablet, or wherever you are, and whenever you want. You can also listen to it on our CMDA app or at cmda.org/cmdamatters. You know, the truth about the causes and appropriate ways to handle depression and anxiety often become distorted in our world today. In John chapter 10, verse 10, Jesus reminds us, "The thief comes only to steal and to kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." Jesus tells us that God's desire for us is to live abundantly, friends, experiencing joy in Him and all the good gifts He has given to us, those of us His sons and daughters who serve Him in healthcare. This is Dr. Mike Chupp signing off for now and reminding you that what matters to you matters to CMDA. And CMDA Matters. We'll see you next week, God willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.